The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. You know, world experts see the exact same thing in the future that Bible prophecy says is true. World experts say they can see ahead world perils, but they say humanity will survive. I was at the Futurist Conference in Washington, D.C. recently, and these new breed of scholars, the futurists, have an idea about the future of this world, a very, very broad idea from dozens and even hundreds of different points of view, of course, taking into account anything from weather patterns to the growth of megalopolises and cities to sprawling urban complexes to crime to the process of aging to starvation or famine or what have you. It's like a group of specialists from many dozens of different fields that are trying to project forward all of the current problems facing humankind and arrive at some kind of a solution, some kind of an outcome, some kind of a prediction as to what they can see ahead in the future. Recently, more than 2,000 of them met in Washington, D.C. to pool their ideas. This was the second assembly of the World Future Society. And with variations, the consensus of all those people gathered together seemed to be great world troubles are ahead. The future will be bothersome, sometimes very dangerous, but humanity will survive. As a matter of fact, Thomas Wilson, who is vice president of the Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies, said, "We can ward off the doomsday syndrome. If we understand that human decisions determine human conditions, we can no longer enjoy the luxury of opting for short-term benefits while ignoring the long-term consequences." Those are words. They're good words. They mean exactly what they say. It is true. I agree with them. We can no longer enjoy the luxury of opting for short-term benefits while ignoring the long-term consequences. But now let's first discuss what those words mean, and then secondly find out if we're going to change our way of life and no longer continue to enjoy the luxury of short-term benefits and ignore long-term consequences. What are the short-term benefits that we are enjoying today? Well, so far, even though we're paying more for it today, cheap energy. And an enormous, unbelievable amount of it. That's a short-term benefit because, you see, energy sources are limited. And we have been shocked recently to be told that there are known proven reserves where hopefully scrambling around the world, developing, discovering, finding other areas where oil and coal and the fossil fuels might become available, but this is strictly short-term. Short-term, when you're talking of the entirety of humankind and you're talking of global conditions in terms of decades and centuries. Now, we know that the world has another approximate 50 years to go on oil. About 11 years in the United States, until we're dependent 100%. Now, maybe that people could argue that, but that's what I've read in some of the leading and most authoritative publications and magazines. So, at that time, apparently, why we'll be dependent 100% on imported oil from other places. They claim 50 years or so in Saudi Arabia. I think if you've read recent articles about the Shah of Iran, you know that he's in quite a hurry to capture the dreams of empire because Iran knows that their oil reserves are going to run out long before those of Saudi Arabia. So they're in a very great hurry to recycle revenue earned from exported oil to build Iran into a glittering, modern, developed society. So here's the problem. Today, we are absolutely hooked on the short-term benefits, and we have ignored the long-term consequences. Those of pollution, the unbelievable proliferation of the types of vehicles that we depend upon today, the resultant smog, accidents, economic squeeze, and problems, without even getting into all of the psychological stresses we place upon ourselves because of our rapid travel with automobiles, buses, and aircraft, especially jet lag, and the stress of modern noise pollution and the level of life as we live it in our teeming, burgeoning societies of over-industrialized, over-technologically oriented societies, which themselves threaten to kill us, drive us mad, make us candidates for suicide, destroy our marriages and lives, upset our homes, and destroy our psyche and get us all so enervated and exhausted mentally that we are like a group of rats in a cage with the same aberrations from overcrowding that they experience, where a tremendous number of us are off somehow in our upper story, where a tremendous number are dying of modern man-made type diseases directly resulting from pollution and from pre-packaged, prepared artificial food and from flatulence and flabbiness and lack of proper exercise because of the machines we had to do our work for us. All of the spin-off from this modern technology is basically what is wrong with us today, whether you're talking of disease or crime or drug addiction or divorce. The spin-off from modern development and technology is the problem. Now, on the one hand, we can laugh at some of the feudal societies of the Arabs, the oil states, and we begin to learn a little more about them as we do more business with them, depend more upon them, and the world looks toward the diminishing piles of money and of gold and silver in its coffers in the Western world and the tremendous transfer of the wealth of the world into the coffers of the Arab oil sheikdoms. Little by little now, some of the Arab governments are doing all they can to expose the Arab way of life, Arab governments, and Arab civilization and society to the Western mind. And more, there are leading Arabs, educated in universities in the West, like as not, who are traveling about, lecturing, trying to expose the Western mind to more and more of Arab thought and Arab ways of living and lifestyle. But as you look into those societies, you find an absence of some of the things we have. But the faster they build, and the more they industrialize, and the more they lean toward Western ways, the more of those things they will find. For example, you find practically no divorce. Although there is in some society, well, here and there, it varies from place to place, not only to the fact that it exists, but that the number of wives they can have, you will discover polygamy, for example. But divorce is almost non-existent in some of those societies. Certain types of diseases that we know in the West are virtually non-existent, where other types of more degenerative diseases do exist. So it seems to be that we in this world are absolutely hooked on our machines. And I have said for so many years that Frankenstein-like, our very machinery is going to finally come crushing in on us and going to be the problem that will bring about the downfall of modern civilization. The very height of all of our achievements is in the area of nuclear power, nuclear energy, and of course, space flight. This is at the absolute apex of all of modern-day scientific achievement. I believe it was the late General Eisenhower, who mentioned the doomsday potential of the atomic bomb. I believe it was the late General Douglas MacArthur, who talked about science bequeathing to mankind the potential for annihilation, and saying that mankind had had his last chance, and that unless we somehow managed to harness this new power we had discovered, that there wouldn't be a man, woman, or child living on the earth in the decades and the centuries ahead. Well, the core problem we look at today, if you view the entirety of the human race in an overview of pollution, of population, of food, of famine, of the potential of nuclear war, the core problem we face is how to strike a balance between the world's burgeoning, teeming population, the abuse of the ecosystem which we live upon and in and which we share, and on the other hand, the dwindling, shrinking resources of the earth. And I don't speak only of acreage, of arable land, but I speak even of metals, of minerals, of fuel, of energy, of all earth resources, because they are shrinking. So when you look at the sheer weight of humankind on the earth, and you try to assess where do we go from here, with the population supposedly doubling by the end of the century or so, then doubling again in another 35 years, then doubling again in about another 17 years beyond that, then you and I have both got to say that's utterly impossible. The world cannot, and as a matter of fact, is not supporting its present population. Lemming-like, already there is a doomsday element with which we live every single day, but it's far away from us in the Western world, and most of us are only dimly aware of it, and then only from time to time. A network special comes along, a bizarre, strange magazine article with horrible pictures that we don't like to look at comes along. Every few months, maybe dimly in the back of our consciousness, we hear about a horrible famine in some part of the world, likely as not Africa or Southeastern Asia. So we're once again made dimly aware of the idea of famine, of drought, of thousands, no, millions, starving to death because they don't have enough food. If a president of the world were to deliver a State of the World address, he would have to assess that problem and tell you exactly what food and population curves really are. Now, when we see that there are known curves, there are known mathematical equations, there are known graphs and charts which you can superpose one atop the other, and which you can actually overlay to get a true picture of exactly where we are headed in the decades just around the corner. And those decades sure go whizzing by to a person over 40, don't they? Maybe you can come to understand a little bit that when I tell you this population of this world is going to double by about the turn of the century, I say something is going to happen to prevent it, because this world can't take care of the millions, no, the billions that live upon it right now. It is utterly impossible. The trend is there. The curve is there. The babies are being born at that rate. But the ecosystem from which we take our day-to-day means of living, our survival, simply cannot stand the impact. What is going to happen? You are living at the close of an age. You are living in the time of the culmination of what we have known as civilization. It may last 5 years, it may last 7, 11, 15, I don't know. I doubt that it lasts that long, but it may, in spite of my doubts. But nevertheless, I tell you, from any point of view, whether you are talking about politics, about government, about military, about science, about education, about industry, whether you're talking about medicine, health, whether you are talking about crime or drugs, whether you are talking of any of the inputs in this present world of ours and the entirety of all of the problems that confront humankind, global crises are ahead. There is no doubt in anybody's mind who is a serious thinking person. Nobody doubts it. I'm not saying that's some wild-eyed, leonine, long, flowing-haired, religious, bug-eyed fanatic's idea wearing a Moses-like robe and carrying a shepherd's crook who is shouting on the hill as the lightning blasts around, "Flee from the wrath to come." I'm telling you that scientists who gather together in their various associations can tell you from any point of view you'd like to slice it that you live in the end of an age. Now, last time I was showing you how Jesus Christ of Nazareth predicted precisely that, and he put his finger on the pulse of the world in which you live today, that he looked over and beyond the day in which he lived and down into this modern day in which you live, and even appraised and assessed exactly how it would all come about. And he showed how war, drought, famine, disease, and pestilence, epidemics, how it would all overlay or superpose one upon another, one atop another, one after another, one affecting another, everything interrelating. And then he finally said it would culminate in a time when, except those days should be shortened, there would not one man, woman, or child be left alive on the face of the earth. So the futurists who met in Washington, D.C., in that sense of the word, are corroborating what Jesus Christ of Nazareth says in Bible prophecy. Scientists don't even know that they are corroborating the Bible. When they look on down into the future, they see world peril ahead, but they say humanity will survive. But you know, many of them actually expect that humanity will survive only in a kind of a Tower of Babel-like situation. They expect a virtual doomsday eruption of global war and pollution as a result, meaning radioactive pollution, of course, and fallout. They expect such complete destruction of civilization as we know it that the world, in their view, will begin a completely new era of a dark age, of a virtual stone age civilization of scattered bands of people fighting over dwindling means of survival, going back to the ground, to communal farming, gradually learning, perhaps even new languages will emerge and it's almost like starting all over again. Maybe you've seen in the era of the 50s, 60s, and 70s of the atomic and the nuclear age, the cartoon that was widely circulated of the two chimpanzees sitting on the shattered limb of one remaining battered old tree. And all around, as far as the eye can see, nothing but twisted girders and broken shards of building and pile of rubble and blasted trees and a lunar-like landscape of what used to be the Earth. Obviously, these are the two last creatures existing on the face of the Earth. And the one turns to the other and says, "Do you think it's worth starting all over again?" That was a rather widely circulated cartoon back a couple of decades ago at the very beginning of an awareness of the atomic age. But you know, this is what a lot of people practically expect to occur. Actually, Jesus says it's going to come short of that, a great deal short of that. It's not going to get that bad. I think there are many people who pessimistically think that it's going to become just about that bad. Some of the science fiction books and motion pictures portray an era of just the last few survivors. As a matter of fact, they've even said it would be wise if we were to build, along with our joint Soviet-American space venture, some kind of a space-age Noah's Ark, where, knowing the way the world is headed, knowing that nuclear war may come, knowing the extermination of humankind is a potential, maybe we could launch a few people of certain races. And here you get people into the idea of playing God, somebody who has to decide who goes, and what sex are they going to be, and how many, and of what race, and who's going to be left out, and why. It would be an enormous problem, wouldn't it? But the idea would be that a colony of human beings would be launched into outer space to orbit, and they would have some kind of an artificial environment in that little space capsule up there. It'd be big by our modern-day standards, but little in comparison with the one we're already on, the Earth. And they would be farming, and they would actually stay up there for generations. And then they would come back down at some day when the Earth was once again safe to colonize. Now, do you know, such ideas have actually been advanced, and people have actually thought that that's maybe the only way that humanity can be saved alive. So here's this 24th chapter of the book of Matthew, to which I had come last time. Just an interjection, you might say, of this one particular couple of programs in the series in which I have been recently in the Gospels, in wading through the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John as they interrelate and are interwoven one with the other, even using a harmony from time to time. But here in the 24th chapter of Matthew, the disciples were asking Jesus what he meant by the fact that there wouldn't be one stone left atop another in the city of Jerusalem, and that he was going to come back to this earth, and that there would be a certain sign by which people would know. And the very first warning he gave them, and that was where I concluded last time, was how is it possible to be deceived, was that people would come, and they would say Jesus is the Christ. They would laud and praise and adore Jesus. They would repeat his name. They would worship him, as I pointed out in the 15th chapter of Matthew. Jesus said they can do that, but do it in vain. And yet, even with all that worship and lip service to Jesus, they would be deceived. That has happened, and is happening. People by the millions think they are Christian, and have never even seen a Bible definition of what a Christian is. People by the millions think they are saved, and are not living a life in conformance with the example Jesus set, and therefore are not headed toward salvation. Millions are deceived. Jesus said, "Broad is the way that leads to destruction." And he said, "The many are going that way." He said it was narrow, straight, and difficult, the way that led to life. And he said, "Few, very few, were going that way." He called his disciples little flock. He said, "Fear not, little flock. It's your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom." He described the church of which he was the head, of a small, struggling group of people, little known and recognized by the world, but like a voice in the wilderness, with a message to do, with a great commission to fulfill and perform prior to the second coming of Jesus Christ, not a great, large political organization influencing the course of the world, meddling in the affairs of state and government whatsoever, but a tiny group with nothing but a message, a witness, and a warning to proclaim. If you were to read all the descriptions of the church of which Jesus is the head, the very proof of where is that church, what would it be doing, what would be the only sign by which you could recognize it, what would be its name, what kind of laws, precepts, statutes, traditions would it observe, what would be its doctrine, it would just about blow your mind. You would find so many opposites from what you think, from what you've always been taught, from what you might assume the Bible says, that it would really be amazing, which is what I've been stressing in a series of programs, the opposite between what the Bible really says and what people have always been taught to assume that it says. So Jesus said, "Take heed that no man deceive you," verse 4 of Matthew 24, "for many shall come in my name, saying I am the Christ, and shall deceive many." And then he said, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass," but that isn't the end. The end is not yet. End of what? Well, I had shown last time that the two Greek words used variably, interchangeably, in the New Testament are either cosmos or aeon. And cosmos means society or system or civilization, and aeon means age, relating to the same thing. Age the way we count it, like the space age or the machine age. Man's ages, man's dynasties, man's generations on the earth. Jesus wasn't talking about the destruction of all of earth, but the disintegration of a civilization. And that's precisely what many scientists expect is going to occur. Now, we are hearing of wars and rumors of wars. Every single day, we will read something else about the struggle to find peace in the Middle East, or in Korea, or in Southeast Asia, or between various factions in Central and South America, or in Portugal, or between Greece and Turkey, or in other member states of NATO, such as the Icelandic and the British dispute over fishing rights, or the territorial problems of nations, such as the 200 versus the 12 mile, and I don't know what America might take, North America, the United States might take a second, third, and fourth look at that, if they would look at the Japanese and Russian fisheries off our own coast, with an easy sight of Oregon, Washington, Alaska. Maybe they would think that maybe those people down in Peru had a pretty good idea there. But then I'll probably get a letter from the wife of a tuna boat captain who was in jail, and I don't mean to say that's a good thing under existing law. I don't want to get into that kind of political controversy. But that's the type of thing of which your news exists or subsists and consists today. It is the constant war-making, political jostling for position of power. It is constantly the threat of war, the rumor of war, or the actuality of war, exactly as Jesus said you would be hearing. In verse 6 of Matthew 24, he said, "Wars and rumors of wars." In verse 7, he said, "Nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom," as if not only presidencies, but even absolute or limited monarchies and empires, trading blocs, alliances, groups of nations, "and there shall be famines." And we have entered into a time of horrible famine in the world, and very few people pay much attention to it. The World Conference on Food at Rome was attended by representatives of more than 100 nations and the Pope himself. Our own representatives of the Worldwide Church of God, the Plain Truth and Ambassador College, were there. And we heard reports, and I gave you on the telephone direct from Rome, reports during that conference. And you saw how all that was a lot of talk, a lot of verbiage, which rhymes with garbage, which is another form of pollution, which didn't feed anybody, didn't plant a single seed, didn't fertilize a single acre, didn't solve one problem, but was used as nothing but an empty, hollow, political platform for a lot of people to air their grievances. It allowed the so-called third world nations, including South American countries and North African countries, to viciously lash out at and attack the United States. The Chinese attacked the United States and claimed that the population explosion is not even true, is an invention of the Western democracies to try to keep these Eastern peoples, and every sixth man is already a Chinaman, trying to keep them from proliferating because we fear Asia and we don't want to get overrun. And they were using it as a political football. So what does your news consist of? Wars and rumors of wars, and famine. Famine is real. It is here. Literally millions, hundreds of millions of human beings face starvation. Jesus said we would be living in those days. Was he accurate, or was it just a good guess? Could anybody have said it? He went on to say, there shall be pestilences, and that means disease epidemics, and becoming ever intensified and taking more lives, and earthquakes. Now, I'm not going to rush off to the hills with a can of tomato juice and stare out of my desert cave somewhere at the sun and wait for the end of the world. I happen to have to live, perish the thought, but that's the way it is. Most of the time, I get away and escape when I can. In Southern California, some years ago, a lot of people packed up everything and went fleeing off across the desert. I don't know how far they thought they had to go. Past the area where they said California was going to fall any moment now into the abyssal depths of the ocean. Well, don't think that that can't happen from the standpoint of all that we know about the faults in Southern California, the most famous of all, the Andreas or San Andreas Fault that runs right underneath the city of San Francisco and down through and around the Bakersfield, Tehachapi area and into the San Gabriel Mountains just barely north of Pasadena right here from where I speak at the moment, because it does. But we've entered a time of unusual earthquake activity. If you were to go back and to read an almanac about earthquakes and the number of earthquakes in the last very few years, I think you'd be amazed. It would make quite a study. So he said earthquakes, but he also went on to say in diverse, meaning different, and I take that to mean strange and unusual, not normal or habitual places. And we're entering a time of the potential of great earthquakes. And that has been a warning that has been sounded not by me, but by many, many scientists who are in that field, and they have reason to be alarmed. The longer it is from the last great quake, they say, the closer you are to the next one. So all of these prophecies that interrelate, that overlap, and that give you the overview of where we are in world conditions right now do apply. But then Jesus went on to talk even about religious martyrdom, about praying that you don't have to flee on the Sabbath day. I don't know why in the world anybody in the Western world or so-called Christianity would even be worried about that statement unless they were keeping the Sabbath day. Do you? Well, that's another thought. I'm going to get in trouble if I ask a question like that. People are going to think that I may mean that the fourth commandment is still to be kept today. And of course I do, but then I don't want to get people mad at me, so forgive me for that, would you please? But I do believe what Jesus said, what the Bible says, and I think you should too, but perhaps that's another subject. I don't want to get people overly angry. Eventually they'll come around to see that that is the truth if they were to study it for themselves. But in the meantime, why don't you write for this booklet, What is the True Gospel? And the booklet called The Real Jesus. It's absolutely free of charge and no price. And the current number of The Plain Truth with article after article from many different points of view about nuclear proliferation. Did you know the West Germans are building nuclear plants for the people of South America, even in the big nation of Brazil? Did you know the West Germans had the capacity to build nuclear plants, not only for themselves, but for other countries? Write for the current number of The Plain Truth and find the whole truth behind nuclear proliferation, the spread of atomic and nuclear weapons around the world. It's free of charge, no price, and all you need to do is to request it by sending your letter to Post Office Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. We need that. That's all. There is no cost, but tell us the name of the radio station to which you've been listening, the call letters, and then send your letter to Box 345, Sydney, New South Wales. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have been listening to The World Tomorrow. If you would like more information, write to Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales. That's Ambassador College, Box 345, GPO Sydney, New South Wales.